Chapter 1. With slow, ponderously rhythmical steps, the oxen moved, each step a pause and an effort, each movement a deadening drag. Fine white dust hung in a sifting cloud above the wagon train, caking the nostrils of animals and men, blanketing the lean sides of oxen and horses, dusting with a thin film the clothing of men and women. Red-rimmed and bloodshot eyes stared with dazed weariness into the limitless distance before them, seeing nothing, knowing nothing. Long since, all had been forgotten but heat, dust, and aching muscles. Each succeeding step lifted a powdery dust, stifling and irritating. It lay a foot deep on the endless plain, drowning the sparse grass and sage. Rock Bannon, riding away from the train and alone, drew in his steel-dust stallion and turned in the saddle, looking back over the covered wagons, 16 of them in a long line with some lead horses and a few outriders, yet not one who rode so far out as himself. From where he sat, he couldn't see their faces, but in the days just past, he'd seen them many times, and the expression of each was engraved in his mind. Haggard, worn, hungry for rest and cool water, he knew that in the secret heart of each there was a longing to stop. The vision was in him yet, the golden promise of the distant hills, offering a land of milk and honey, the fair and flowering land sought by all wandering peoples of whatever time and whatever place. No hardship could seem too great, no trail too long, no mountains impassable when the vision was upon him. It was always and forever the same when men saw the future opening beyond the hills where the sun slept. Yet this time the vision must hold meaning. This time the end of the trail must bring realization, for they had brought their women and children along. All but Rock Bannon. He had neither woman nor child nor anyone anywhere. He had a horse and a saddle, a ready gun, and a mind filled with the lore of the trail, and eyes ever fixed on something he wanted, something faint and indistinct in outline, ever distant, yet ever real. Only of late, as he rode alone on the far flank of the wagon train, had that something begun to take shape and outline, and the shape was that of Sharon Crockett. His somber green eyes slanted back now to the last wagon but one, where the red-gold hair of Sharon on the driver's seat was a flame no dust could dim. In the back of that heavily loaded wagon was Tom Crockett, her father, stirring, restless with fever and hurt, nursing a bullet wound in his thigh, a memento of the battle with Buffalo Hide's warriors. From the head of the train came a long, melodious halloo, and Cap Mulholland swung his arm in a great circle, and the lead oxen turned ponderously to swing in the beginning of the circle. Rock touched the gray with his heels and rode slowly toward the wagon train. He was never sure these days as to his reception. Cap's beard was white with dust as he looked up. Weariness and worry showed in his face.
"Rock," he said, "we could sure use a little fresh meat. We're all a mite short on rations, and you seem to be the best hunter amongst us."
"All right," Rock said. "I'll see what I can do after I get Crockett's wagon in place."
Mulholland's head turned sharply.
"Bannon, I'd let that girl alone if I were you. No offense intended, but she ain't your kind. I ain't denying you've been a sight of help to us. In fact, I don't know what we'd have done without you, and we're glad you came along. But Sharon Mulholland's another story. Her paw's bedded down now and in no shape to speak."
Bannon turned the steel dust sharply. His face was grim and his jaw hard.
"Did he ask you to speak to me, or did she?"
"Well, no, not exactly," Mulholland said uncomfortably. "But I'm heading this train."
"Then I'll thank you to mind your own business. Heading this wagon train is job enough for any man. Anytime the Crocketts ask me to stay away, I'll stay. But that's their affair."
Mulholland's face flushed and his eyes darkened with anger.